We begin in the first week by saying that when we're dealing with Tarsha, we're really dealing with Rivas Derech Mekach, meaning Rivas that is acquired not via a direct loan, but rather via some kind of a sale, some kind of a business deal that's taking place. So we dealt with Rav Nachman, and Rav Nachman's case was actually much more straightforward than what we're going to see in Rav Chama. Rav Nachman's discussion was where I'm going to sell it to you, and you're going to pay me more later on for the right to be able to get the product today, right? That was the opposite of psika al haperos, in which he pays less upfront in order to get delivery of the item later. That's where he is lending the money to the other fellow. But in this case, he, the buyer, is actually the borrower, because he is getting the goods now and paying later, and he pays more than the item would have been worth right now. That was sort of Nachman's case. We discussed, you know, all of the different permutations of which ways it could be done, which ways it could not be done. Do we follow Rav Nachman? Do we not follow Rav Nachman? We rejected Rav Papa's approach in his version of the Tarsha, in which he is actually helping out the buyer, because he didn't want to sell it right now at all. He was going to sell it later for more money. And so his argument is, look, I didn't gain anything on the deal, and I'm just helping this guy out by doing it. And nonetheless, we said, sorry, Rav Papa, your Tarsha is out. We do not like Rav Papa's Tarsha. Which, by the way, just really bothers me a little bit, in the sense that you had an Amora, Rav Papa, right, who was running around doing this in business, and we find out he's now guilty of Rivas. I don't know if that bothers anybody else, but it bothers me.
Of all Prakim and Shas, you have that everywhere in this paragraph.
Yes. We have Rav Chiya with the dinar. I mean, you have...
And the son of the Rabba is... Whatever.
Yes. It's just very strange.
He wasn't really looking to sell.
That's true. But it's just like, yeah, I don't know.
We have an answer.
Somehow this is stunning to me. Go ahead. Rav Chama. We now get to the third Tarsha, third and last Tarsha in the series, and that's Rav Chama's Tarsha, which is about legitimizing acceptance of a return on one's investment, and it will set us up, God willing, in an hour, for Heter Iska, ultimately. So in order to understand what's going on with Rav Chama and what the issues are, it's actually best to see a few Gemaras first. Does anyone need a hard copy? I have one more hard copy available. No, we're good. Okay. So you need to see a few other passages of Gemara first. The first time that... Well, the basic system that we're going to use by the end of this shiur is going to be what's called palga milva, palga pikadon. Right? Half loan and half pikadon is something that is given to another person to take care of, to watch, but not to actually use. So in other words, if I'm entering into this business deal with Meron, in which I am the investing partner, and Meron is the managing partner. Let's say we're going to go into business together. Meron wants to run a store. I'm going to provide him with the capital. He's going to buy the goods and sell everything and all that, and we're going to split the proceeds in the end. So where we want to get to at the end of all of this is the idea that when I provide you with the money, let's say it's $1 million to start it up, I'm actually giving you $500,000 that's a loan to you for your use in this investment. Well, whether it's only for your use is something we have to talk about, but it's, we'll call it for your use in this investment. And then $500,000 that I'm giving you is actually my money, which I want you to use in this investment, but when I get my proceeds on the deal, let's pretend we're splitting 50-50, my 50% of the profits is actually just the profit on the picadon. That's it. And he's going to owe me, at the end of the day, the $1 million back, because $500,000 is what I lent him. He has to pay that back to me. And he's going to owe me the $500,000 that was my picadon, because it wasn't for him to keep. And he's going to give me the proceeds on my $500,000 that was the picadon. He's giving me nothing on the halva. Now, one thing we're also going to note is he has to be paid for the work he did on my investment, and we'll talk about that as well. But that's the basic end game structure we want to get to.
Jerry. And if there's a loss?
And if there's a loss, I'll eat the loss. That's, you know, that's life.
How do we allocate the loss?
So when we get to Heter Iska, which Rabbi Ziering is waiting to do after this topic, then we'll have to talk more about how you handle loss. And there are all sorts of fun discussions as part of this that are not for this year. That's actually where we have to get to. The only reason I'm starting at the end is because it will explain the beginning. Meaning, the first time that we find in the Gemara the idea of labeling my investment as part investment, part loan, right, or part pikadon, part halva, really is the proper term, has nothing to do with ribbis at all. It's a completely different discussion. But it sets us up for this conversation. It's dealing with the issue of responsibility for the merchandise in a case of ones. Okay, meaning, I give Meron, instead of giving him money to use in a store, I give him merchandise to sell. We now have a problem. What happens if something happens to the merchandise on the way to market? Who's going to be responsible for it? Do you say Torchino's responsible for the merchandise? Do you say that Meron is responsible for the merchandise? So take a look at source Aleph. Bav Metzio Kuvdalad Amud Beis. Amri Neher Doi. They said in Neher Doi, Hai Iska. This Iska is the term that we use for the merchandise. Palga Milva Upalga Pikadon. It is part loan, part pikadon, avud rabbanan milsa denechale lalova venechale lamalva. The rabbanan created a takana which will help out both sides. What do you mean helping out both sides? The Shita Mekubetz is quoted by Yehonah's son in source base. Avud rabbanan milsa denechale trabayu. Shem hayu omer machrayis kolan achasim al hamalva. If we were to say that the responsibility for all of the merchandise rests with the creditor, meaning me, I provided you with the merchandise, sula boy lahamtsima uslani. You know what I would say? Forget it. I'm not interested in helping you. Because if anything happens to it, it's on me. Granted that if you will be responsible for certain things, theft, loss, there are certain responsibilities you'll have. Nonetheless, lefishastam reva haschoros hu baholach limakom lamakom derech yamo yabasha, at least in the day of Rabbeinu Yohanan, the main way you made a profit on a business was by transporting things from point A to point B. That's your value added. So, hanasim shchichi b'chayom b'drachim, there are always people laying in wait for you on the road. If the creditor were to know that he was going to have all the responsibility, he would never ever help anybody. He would never give anybody merchandise. That's the idea in terms of sparing him some of the responsibility. Hold on. But if we were to put everything on the borrower, and no one would want to take any merchandise because of the responsibility involved. He would be scared and he could lose everything. So we're going to structure it as half belonging to the malveh. And and that's the pikadon portion of it. When you're dealing with a pikadon, that's owned by the malveh still. And therefore, for onus purposes, it's still his responsibility. And half of it is going to be a halva'ah, a loan, to the borrower. And a borrower is responsible for onsim on a loan. That's the way it works. In the event that I borrow $1 million, and lightning strikes the $1 million, I still have to pay back $1 million. I can't say anything about onus. Yeah, Jerry.
But this is consignment. Is this not regular, the term that we use?
More or less, yes.
Because that's what consignment is.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is what it is. Okay.
Yeah.
The use of the word pikadon, normally you give, when you have pikadon, you give back exactly the same item.
That's correct, and that's what you do here too.
But why? He received money which he's used, bought. Didn't we?
Oh, you mean in the cash case in that I'm describing. So that is worth talking about, but it won't be yet.
Okay.
Yeah.
So are they each 50% responsible for the loss then? Is that how it works practically?
More or less, yeah. Responsible 50% of the loss. So that's where this idea comes from. This idea of splitting something into half investment, or call it half because I'm half halva, just use the Gemara's terminology, that's always the best way to do it. Fine.
But do the people know this when they're doing this?
Yes. Yeah. In terms of what's going on with Heter Iska, I'm going to leave all of this in the department of Rabbi Ziering when he gets to Heter Iska. In this arrangement here, you bet. If you don't enter a deal knowing your responsibilities, you're going to have a problem.
This is not a haramah.
No.
This is an actual deal.
Right.
So they know
exactly what they're doing.
No, they know it's 50-50. They know.
Yeah. Okay. The whole bit, yes. Now,
it was a standard monetary arrangement.
Right. Now, when you do a 50-50 investment partnership, I mentioned this already briefly before, but now I spell it out in a source, you have to pay the managing partner for his work on the pikadon. Right? In the case that I described in the beginning, in which we say that half the money that I'm giving Meron is my investment in the business, and half of it is a loan for him to invest in the business, so you have a potential problem. Which is good, he's going to pay me back my halva. That's clear. That's straightforward. And good, he's going to give me back my pikadon, and he's going to give me back whatever interest my pikadon earned. That's fine. And it's interest on the pikadon, and therefore there's no issue of ribis. However, there's also the work he did for me. He's running the investment. I wrote a check, and now I went off to Aruba. So why isn't that a ribis problem, the work that he is doing on it? And the answer is that's a Mishnah. The Mishnah is found above Metzia Parakei, Mishnah Dalet, Samachez Amad Aleph, Source Gimel. Ein Moshivin, by the way, for those who are working from the source sheets, I think everybody here should. Yeah, those who are working with the printed ones, you just have to start at Mem Gimel and work your way down. You follow? So source Gimel is source Mem Hey. It's because they didn't start the pagination on that one. I didn't renumber. Anyway. Ein Moshivin Chenveni Lemachtis Sachar. You are not supposed to set up a store owner in a deal that's 50-50, i.e. I'm going to give him the merchandise, he's going to sell it, and then I'm going to get 50% of the proceeds. And I can't give somebody money to buy merchandise at a 50-50 deal. Ellen can no say mos charo kipoel, unless I pay him like a worker. I have to pay him for the work that he does. That's your second key source. You have to pay the schar tircha. If it's not a case of a pikadon, if it's not a case where I'm giving him something of mine to watch and then I get interest on, if it's a straight loan, then you're going to have to make sure that you only lend him whatever it is he's paying you back, or vice versa, he only pays you back that which you are lending him. Right, because you're not allowed to have ribbis, right? And that's straightforward. This isn't the chiddush. This is what we've been doing all year. If I lend somebody money and there's no pikadon involved, I can't get interest back. And that is the source for the last gemara we need to see here in source Dalet. Brisa, I am based in the base at Gimel, but this is a very important brisa for our discussion. Tanu Rabbanan, Hamolich Chavila Mimakom LaMakom. I have merchandise. I am taking it from point A to point B. I'm taking it from Toronto to Hamilton. Along the way, Mitzal Chaveiro, some guy I know encounters me. Va'amar lo, and he says to me, Tnei Huli, Vani Alocha Kederach Shemal Mocha Ba'oso Makom. He says, give it to me, and I will give you. I'm sorry, I just jumped down into the rush. That's funny. All right, but it doesn't matter. It's the same words. Vani Alocha Kederach Shemal Mocha Ba'oso Makom, and give it to me, and I will pay you whatever you would have gotten in that place. So in other words, I'm bringing the merchandise. He's going to give me whatever it is that he gets for it, or that theoretically he would have gotten for it in that other place. And what's in it for him in doing so? Why does he want to do this? Lavdavka. Right? That's all right. I'm talking in Hebrew. I mean, Hebrew is all pronounced. Open up a chumash. The issue here is Hashelai. What I'm trying to ask is how does if Meron again is the one I'm encountering on my way to Hamilton? Meron takes the goods and Meron is going to sell it in Hamilton, and he's going to give me the Hamilton price. How is it that, why is this worth his while? Like, he's a nice guy, I get it, but why is this worth his while?
You have two options. Or you're going to sell it higher, or who can use the money.
Right. Either he is going to sell it for more than what we assumed it was going to go for in Hamilton, or he's going to sell it, he's going to use the money, and invest with it or whatever it is, and then eventually he'll come back to me and he'll pay me the amount that he sold it for in Hamilton. The problem that you're going to run into here, though, and this is the key, is that he's also selling it on my behalf. Right? He's selling it on my behalf. So it's very important to recognize that, well, there are two problems. One is that he's working on my behalf, that I'll come back to. I'm not there yet. But the other problem is, he got the merchandise from me here. Let's pretend the merchandise is worth $100 here in Toronto, and it's worth $200 in Hamilton. So that means that he took $100 worth of, Meron took $100 worth of merchandise from Torchiner here in Toronto, and he paid Torchina $200 at the end of the day. You follow the problem? He got $100 worth from me here. He sold it for $200, and then he gave me the $200. So that means he's giving me ribbis. Right? Much later on, he's not giving me $200 right now. He's giving me $200 in the end. So that means he borrowed $100 and he gave me back $200. That's a no-no. So therefore, the Gemara says, the Braisa says, Birshus Mocher Mutter. If the way you do it is that the stuff that he takes to Hamilton for me, this merchandise, is actually considered in my domain all along. If something happens to it between Toronto and Hamilton, it's my loss. So he never took possession. Meron never took possession of the goods that he's selling. He only got it from me as a loan in Hamilton when he sold it off, when he got the $200. So that's good. He borrowed $200 and he gave me $200. Everybody's happy. Whereas if when he is transporting it, it's Bershus Lokeach, it's in Meron's possession, then usher, that's no good. So that's a second ribbis concern. Our first ribbis concern was the work issue, and we have to come back to Schar Tircha here in a second. Our second ribbis concern, though, and the one that's really the functional one in this Gemara, in Sur Dalid, is that if he takes possession of it in a place where it's cheaper, but he is going to pay me for it based on what it's worth in the more expensive location, that's ribbis. So we have to make sure that he doesn't acquire it. He isn't getting the funds until he's in the more expensive place and he gets the $200. Clear? That's basic in order to get anywhere in this. The Rush writes in Source Hay, the last bit of Source Hay, V'hadishari birshus mocher kishanose lo schara malo umzono. This is only permitted where we say, well, it's in the rishus of the mocher, it's in Torchiner's possession until then, only if Torchiner is also going to pay him for his work.
Or if he accepts the responsibility.
No, this is. We'll get to Rochama in a minute. We're not at Rochama yet. The
do you consider the shliach?
Hang on. We're not at Rochama yet in terms of accepting responsibility, but the acceptance of responsibility is what we're talking about when we say Rishus Mocher. That is Rishus Mocher. In the event that the Achrayus is on the Lokeach, we have one problem. In the event that the Achrayus is on the Mocher, we have a different problem. If the Achrayus is on the, what Akiva was pointing out is, if the responsibility for the stuff is with the buyer, right, is with Meron, then we have solved the problem of Schar Tircha. We've solved the problem of work, because now he's working for himself, not working for me. However, now we have the problem that he acquired $100 from me and he's giving me back $200. So that's no good. And in the event that I have the responsibility as the original owner of the goods, he didn't take possession of it yet, then he's working for me when he goes to sell it in Hamilton, and we have the Schar Tircha problem. So the Rush says, the only way this works by saying it's Bershus Mocher, it's mine, is if I'm also going to pay him for his work. Sorry, Tom.
No, it sounds like he's a shliach.
Yeah.
Because you're taking responsibility
precisely
on his way.
And you are correct. That's exactly what it sounds like, and that's exactly what it is. Okay. Bingo. So,
Shaliach until he sell it.
Yeah.
Right.
Then you can use the money. Shaliach,
right. So we have the following lessons that emerge from these sources. You can invest in a business, and you can see a return on it, so long as the proceeds are from your picadon, and the manager is paid for his work on that picadon. And if you don't make it a picadon, then the halva has to be structured properly to avoid ribbis, right? Either you keep responsibility, either you keep the ownership, or you pay him for his work on it. Either way, it's gonna. You keep ownership and you pay him for his work on it. That's what happens.
Did they have insurance in those times?
Yes.
It did?
I mean, not structured with actuaries and everything else the way it is now, but yeah, no, we find insurance cases. Yeah. Yes.
And less discussion on the ribbis.
Yes. Because
that would change a lot of things.
And no, yes. you cannot incorporate it.
Okay. So here's a big side question that I think is important to note. We keep treating ownership and achrayus as though they are atomic, right? If you have achrayus, you are an owner. If you do not have achrayus, you are not an owner. But the truth of the matter is, you could change it. What if I, the investor, retain ownership of the items, so therefore, Meron is only getting it at the end when it's worth $200, and he's not getting $100 and giving back $200? However, Meron is going to accept achrayus, right? Meron will accept the achrayus. So it's important to understand here that there are two different factors in keeping achrayus with me, the original owner of the funds or the merchandise. There are two separate reasons. One is what we already outlined for Mayan Bays, which is to ensure that he isn't the borrower yet. right? But there's also a second concern, which is we want to make sure that he doesn't look like a borrower, because otherwise it'll look like Rivas. In the event that people think that he is a borrower, they see he took the stuff from me now in a place where it's worth less, and he ended up paying me back more. You have an appearance of Rivas issue. That matters. Because of that second concern, the Nesivot Shalom, or the Nesivot Shalom, I should say, notes that that Meron is not allowed to accept Achrayus. Even though normally a Shomer can accept whatever he wants, we can make whatever deal we want. A Shomer Sachar can say, I'm going to accept all the responsibility of a Shoel, and he's able to do that. Here, we don't want that to happen. I brought you the Netivot Shalom in Vav. He says, Mavur de'ein lahakel ulahatir sheikabal av amakabal as hachayus gam betzkufa harishona. We will not be lenient and say that Meron can accept responsibility even in that first stage. Even if we make a condition explicitly, even if we make a deal explicitly that it's my property, it's just his achrayus. Because then it looks like it's his once he takes responsibility for it. It's as though he had already borrowed it, and therefore he will not be allowed to give me a profit. That's the concern, as opposed to a case that shows up in Kufayin Zion. If you take a look at Sur Zion, Ein Mekablin Son Barzil MiYisrael. You are not allowed to accept iron sheep from a Jew. What in the world are you talking about? This is a case of accepting sheep that you are going to raise on behalf of the owner. Okay, so Akiva is going to be the shepherd. He's going to raise the sheep on behalf of the owner, and we're going to split the proceeds. So Da'ainu Shemekabel Mimenu Me'atzon, he accepts 100 sheep. We're going to split the proceeds from the wool, the kids, the milk, lishlish or amta lishlish or revia, whatever the percentage is. Adshana adshana tayim, a year, 2 years, whatever we decide. And to say that if the sheep die, Akiva is going to be responsible for them. Hareza Asr, you can't do that. Sharei Baal Hatzon, Karov L'Rabach V'Rachok L'Hefzid, because then I, as the owner of the sheep, I'm going to win. Right? I'm always going to win on this deal. If anything bad happens, it's Akiva's problem. Right? If good things happen, we split the proceeds. So that's no good. But the Rama writes, that assumes that Akiva is actually getting proceeds on the deal. But if he's not getting any proceeds, then there's no loan. Right? If he's not getting any proceeds, I am saying to him, I want you to work on my sheep, and you are going to give me the proceeds of the sheep. Then there's no loan involved. Even if he accepts all responsibility for the sheep, it's going to be okay, because he's a Shomer Chinam, and he's allowed to decide, I'm going to be a Shoel, right? That sounds like it's very straightforward. It doesn't sound like it's a problem at all. So, but the point is not the line in the Shulchan Aruch, the point is the Chavas Das. The Chavas Das writes in Source Ches, Badei ha'achrayus mashveh ha'mos malveh. It's responsibility for the money that makes the money into a loan. Rakol she'en lo shum tzorech la'amekabel lo havi halva. Only if Meron or Akiva, in the sheep case, are not getting any profit on it, do we say, well, then it's not a loan at all. The halva, you know, rakol she'en lo tzorech halova. It's only a loan in the event that it's going to benefit the borrower. So in other words, what we're getting at here, and the fine point that I'm trying to draw out of this, is that Achrayus can be accepted by an agent who's doing things on my behalf, so long as there's nothing in it for the agent. So it's very clear, he's just my shaliach. He's not a love, he's not a borrower. The moment that he's going to gain something on the deal, that already turns him into something of a love. That turns him into being more of a borrower, and then you can't. So in our discussion, let's say we're doing this deal, and we want to say that Meron doesn't get the goods until he arrives in the more expensive place. However, he's going to take Achrayus now. The answer is no. Because since you have something to gain on the deal, that makes you a Lova. Clear? That's the idea. what if we do the following, though? What if we make the following deal? What if we say that Meron not says, I'm a nice guy, I want to take Achrayus. Pay me and I'll take Achrayus. Give me a consideration for it. So the Drisha says, I'm good with that idea. Like Pesach, source test. He says, V'nira dim hisna imo tchila v'no sein lo sachar v'skar ma k'deshe kamal ol v'mesazek achrayus. In the event that you're going to actually give him something in order for him to accept achrayus, shabir dami, that's fine. Dumi demasna ol v'skar amalo v'davar mu'ud. It's just like when you make a condition with him saying, I'm going to pay you for your work. It's going to be a dime. So if you want to accept that, gesunde heit. He's good with that idea. The Taz says, absolutely not. He says, what are you talking about? You know what that sounds like to me? That sounds like the following case. I want to borrow money from Pesach. We have a deal, but Pesach's going to lend me money. I want to borrow $10,000 from Pesach. But, you know, we're Jews. I can't do this with ribbis with you. Pesach says, I'll make it worth your while. I'm going to make it worth your while. I'm going to give you gifts, and in exchange for the gifts, you borrow the money with ribbis. He wants me to pay him ribbis in exchange for the gifts that he's going to give me. That's the Taz's question. He says, "Can you do that?" And you're all looking at me like I'm out of my mind, because I would be out of my mind. You can't do that. But that's what it is. If you look in Source Yud, in the Taz, the second bold line, Dom Elamisha Nosilove, Zematanos, Shayavamenu, Maus Baribis. Of course you can't do that. So the Taz says to the Drisha, what are you talking about? How can we make a deal, Meron and I? How could we make a deal in which Meron is going to accept Achrayus because I pay him to do so? Why is that any different from me paying the borrower to pay me ribis? The Taz says, absolutely not, you can't do that. And Nesiva Shalom says, no, I'll tell you why the Drisha is okay. He says, because we're also paying Schar Tircha. He says in Source Yud Aleph, Kevin Shemishalim lo Schar Tircha l'tkufa rishona, since there is payment for his work done while he is my agent, Havala Gilu Gamer Shu Bailam, that demonstrates that I am the owner, Vamis Asik Enuela Pavel Shalom, and he's not a borrower. He's just a worker. He did not take ownership. That's clear cut. He didn't take ownership. He's not a borrower substantively. This goes back to the diuk that I'm trying to make, the point that I'm trying to show, that Achrayus has two different functions. The issue of me keeping the Achrayus is not only about me keeping ownership. Even if I solve that problem, I also have to solve the problem of Meron looking like a borrower. So therefore, I would think he can't accept payment to accept Achrayus. That won't work because he's going to look like a borrower. But the answer is no. But since I pay him to work on the stuff, it's clear he's not a borrower. Right? If you borrow $1 million from me to go invest in something, I don't pay you for your work with $1 million. It's your business. You're doing it for yourself. I only pay you if you're working for me. If you're working for me, you're not a borrower. That's the idea. Adam.
Some stuff says that Achrayus makes you into a malka. Does that mean
yes, it's mechze.
We saw a case, and I forget the same, but that also the stories of the Mashu and the Goy.
Yes.
Where Beis Yosef said, if you have a Achrayus and it's something that's hadra de'ene, and you have the right to use it, then formally, it makes you into a malta, into a lova rather.
Well, hadra de'ene is a whole different parsha.
But this is also a case. I mean, the case, Tzon Barzal's not like that. But the case that we're actually talking about is like that. Right? It's not hadra de'ene. You take the
goods
and you bring back money.
Yeah.
He has the right to do whatever he wants with, in theory, just to show up with the money. And he has a price. And he seems to assume that formally turns you into a low one. You have no choice.
Despite the fact that you don't have violence on it.
Right.
I have to see it. It's very interesting.
The back and forth here we're talking about is about
Mechze. Correct. In other words, we are bifurcating ownership and Achrayus. And saying that ownership is retained by Torchino the way it's supposed to be. And Achrayus we want to send off to Meron. Either at first, can Meron just accept it? That's our initial question. And the answer is no, because of the appearance issue. And then second, can I pay him to take it? And the Taz is very offended by that suggestion, but the Nesiva Shalom says, no, it's okay, because since I'm paying him for his tircha, that demonstrates and therefore solves the Mechze problem, but it's only a Mechze problem to begin with.
But does somebody have to see that he got paid?
Right, so that's a general question in all of this. That's an overall question regarding Merci Caribis.
Right.
Who is the Merci here, so
right.
to speak?
Yeah, in other words,
Right. So I think the way to understand that is simply that you are responsible to construct your transactions in such a way that if somebody were to see the papers, they would not think something wrong is going on.
They would have to see it
yeah.
clearly, right?
And if no one sees it, that's it's still something I have to avoid. Chadre chadar, if you will.
Right.
Yeah.
The shalat is whether you can pay someone who's watching an item for you and then delivering it,
right?
And you back.
Right.
So it's not coming up from a shalat or something.
I'm paying someone. You're talking about the Achrayus case where I pay him to do so. So I am paying him in order to watch the item. And he's right. No, that's the point. Is because I'm paying him sartircha. As far as people are concerned, he's just my shaliach. That's the shomer sachar case in Hanami. That's true. That's what Shalom is saying works.
And I guess the amount.
What's that thing, Jeffrey? Is
so I'm trying to understand the happening of the people who have a problem.
Because until you enter into that idea that I am paying him for the sartircha, what you have is me paying him to look like a loaf. Me paying him, and he looks like a loaf. It looks like a loaf.
Why don't you have that problem with other shops?
Because the shomer sachar, generally speaking, isn't spending what I'm giving him.
Yeah,
I give him objects.
But he's bringing me back something.
The
shomer sachar is bringing me back the same item I gave him. That's not halva. That's she'ela. No discussion of ribbis when you're dealing with. Go back to our sa'av discussion, right? I gave you a bottle of ketchup to watch for me. You gave me a bottle of ketchup back. No problem whatsoever. I don't care if they go up in value. That's a different story. I Jeffrey had him, and he's waiting.
How does sartircha fit in what the chavis does?
Why would he have a problem? The chavisda's statement was, as long as there's no tsorech for the mekabel, it's not a loan. He's dealing with the issue of whether Achrayus turns this into a loan, and the answer is not if he's not getting anything out of it. So now your question is,
when did he start to get this sartircha loan to? These types of problems.
Well, not if he's not getting anything on the deal. Yeah.
Maybe the sartircha is so little that it's obvious.
So that actually is going to raise a very good question regarding the sartircha. The Nesiva Shalom goes on. I didn't quote everything here because I had to retype everything and I was going to stop there. But the Nesiva Shalom continues to note that then it has to be a real sartircha. When we deal with heteriska, as Rabbi Ziering is going to point out, God willing, with Herbia Menu, so we're going to say that the payment for sartircha can actually be a token payment, because you're only avoiding ribbis derabanan. However, says the Siva Shalom here, since the issue is appearances, it has to really be that he's your employee, and therefore we say you have to pay him kapoel. You have to pay him properly. So it's an excellent point. Okay, so all of this sets us up now very well to see what comes. Kippol, precisely. So now we'll get into Rav Chama. Now that we have seen already the structure of what we're doing, Rav Chama becomes a lot more clear. So we go back to the Gemara in Samachayim and Aleph Samachayim and Beis, which I reproduced here. It's Sorosyut Beis, the top of the second side. Amr of Chama, Tarsha Didi Vadai Sharmi. He says, I don't know what you're playing at, Rav Nachman and Rav Papa, or maybe just Rav Papa, but my Tarsha is certainly fine. He didn't say what it is, but don't worry about it, it's good. I have the best Tarsha. It's not my Taima. So the Gemara says, why does this work? Nechalahu Deleku Birshusi. They are very happy for it to be in my possession. Because wherever they go, they get a break on the taxes, and everyone sets up a market for them. If you're not confused, you're doing something wrong. I don't know what in the world you're talking about, so we're good. So the way that most Rishonim read this, the Rambam will be the exception, but the way that most Rishonim read this, yeah. If we hadn't been Ezra on Ribis, you know, he would be in that camp as well. The borrower accepts my merchandise, $100, let's say, to sell it in a more expensive place for $150, and he's going to use the $150 from the sale before paying me back. This will sound an awful lot like Ayin Beis Amud Beis Ayin Gimel Amud Aleph. That's the Baal Hamor is going to get very angry about. But the but what Rav Chama is saying is Meron is accepting my merchandise. He's going to sell it in Hamilton for more money. He's going to use the money from the sale before eventually paying me back $150. That's the idea. So it sounds like, as I said, I am based on Gimel and Aleph. The problems with the arrangement are twofold. First of all, Rav Chama said nothing about keeping Achrayus. Right? That's one problem. So if the borrower takes possession in the beginning, right? If Meron takes possession in the beginning, you don't mind that I'm using you as an example all the way through. Thank you, because it's convenient to be consistent with this. If Meron takes possession in the beginning, then he's borrowing $100 and he's paying me back $150 plus his effort on my behalf in selling the goods in Hamilton. And even if you're going to say Achrayus stays with me, right, like we said on Ayin Beis, then the borrower, Meron, only takes possession at the time of the sale, so therefore he only got $150 and he pays me back $150, but what happens to his effort on my behalf? So Rav Chama explains, the borrower is happy to do this for me because the property is in my rishus. Leku b'rishusi, taking it the most simple explanation, the property is in my, Rav Chama's rishus, and therefore the borrower benefits because he's going to use my name on his merchandise in everything that he does using the money from the sale. And that way he's going to avoid the taxes. They're not going to tax him because taxes in those days were a lot more fun than they are these days. And the tax authority could decide, yeah, you, yes, you know. Well, that still happens today. Take that back. But he's going to use my name to avoid the taxes. And he's going to have a monopoly in the market because everyone wants to deal with Rav Chama when he sells his own items there. So how did Rav Chama solve our achrayus and labor problems? So we have three different explanations. The first explanation is Rashi. Rashi says that like Ayin Beis Amud Beis Ayin Gimel Amud Aleph, Rav Chama accepts achrayus for the goods en route to the expensive place, right? Like I just said. So if you say Rashi in source Yud Gimel, the words I bolded, v'hu mekabel olav achrayus derech b'halicha, he, Rav Chama, accepts responsibility for the goods on the way to Hamilton. That's the idea. And as he walks you through it, Valakuchos Mistakum Bekrakmat Yeshlochin Shabamosav, Meron is going to buy goods with the $150 there. Umivian Lakan, Vachrayus Hachazara Aleim, they're going to bring the money back to pay me the $150, and the responsibility for the money on the way back is going to be with Meron. The Kavendel Makabli Alayu Achrayus, and since Meron does not accept responsibility for the stuff on the way there, Lohavi Milva Gabayu, it's not a loan, Acha Prakmatin Imkeres, until the goods are sold, they accept the money and all else is good. That's the way Rashi understands it. So what Rashi has done is he's taken the concept we started this year with, palva milva, palva picadon, and he's applied it to avoid ribis by having the two elements occur in sequence. You follow? It was a picadon first, and then when he arrived there and sold it, it became a halva. That's what he has now done. It's palva milva palga picadon, but in sequence instead of simultaneously. What about the schar tircha? What about the schar tircha? He's working on my stuff. And what's the point of this tax monopoly benefit? What was that about? We didn't have a tax monopoly benefit in Ayin Beis. So Tosfos gives you the answer. Tosfos in Source Yudalid says, he says, Nakilushuka, they get a special market. People will give them a monopoly. Dilavachi, because if you didn't have that element, Hava Aser will be prohibited. Even though the Achrayus is with Rav Chama, because they're working for him. When they bring the merchandise and all that, they're paying back the loan, in addition to which, there's also the work that they do for me. But now that they benefit from my name, that is like them getting schar tircha. They're being paid for their work. That's the idea, and it's a throwback to what we saw in the Mishnah on Daf Samaches, that you have to pay schar tircha. So you follow what Rashi understands in Rav Chama? The only thing Rav Chama is doing is the same thing as Ayin Beis and Beis Ayin Gimel Amud Aleph, in the sense that the achrayus for the goods en route is on the original owner, is on me. It's a pikadon, and then it becomes a halva. That's the idea. And he's also taking care of Skartircha, not by paying him, but by helping him out. By helping him out with his name, his reputation. The Baal HaMor says that if that's the case, then Rav Chama is redundant. Yeah.
So then that would be the case then, even if he doesn't pay.
If he doesn't, he's not paying Skartircha. Flat, he's not paying Skartircha.
He's paying Skartircha by letting him use his name.
Correct. It's in kind or
in
whatever you want to call it. Yeah. So the Baal HaMor.
Using use of the money while he's there. Why isn't that considered Skartircha?
Because that's what the halva is. Without that, there's no halva. That's the loan. Use of the money is the loan. If you told me that counting that as Skartircha works, I could blow up all of this discussion. There's no such thing as ribbis anymore. So take a look at Source Tezvav, because the Baal HaMor says, V'harav Rabbeinu Shlomo Zal, a.k.a. Rashi, Mefarish Achvayis Haderach Chayi Rav Chama. He says the Achvayis was the Rav Chama. Well, the Imkein lo hayat sarach davar acher. In that case, he didn't need anything else, meaning the Mechz of Ashuka. Kidisanya Hamolech Chavil of Makom Lamachot, Lamakom Vershus Mochem Mutter. He says, didn't you read Ayin Beis? Rashi, your case is the same thing as Ayin Beis. You didn't need the whole tax monopoly thing. The Baal HaMor doesn't care about Skartircha, apparently. It's not a concern for him. So Baal HaMor says, I give you a different explanation of what's going on. He says, unlike Ayin Beis and the Beis Ayin Gimel and Aleph, the Achrayus is on the borrower. The responsibility rests not with Rav Chama, it rests with Meirav. You have responsibility from the beginning. But then wait a minute, that means that Rav Chama, Tochiner in this case, flatter myself, I'm lending $100 to Meron and getting back $150. Right? What do you do with that? The answer is that the $50 payment is for the tax monopoly benefit. There's no Skartircha involved in this conversation at all. Meron has responsibility from the beginning, and he takes ownership from the beginning. And therefore, he's borrowing 100 from me and paying me back 150. But that's okay, because his $50 is actually the purchase of the side benefits. That's the way that he takes it. I guess, in a manner of speaking. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. That's the idea. That's the way that he takes it. You can see it in Source Tezayin, but I'm running out of time, so I'm not gonna read the Baal HaMor inside. The Ramban says, I don't know what in the world you're talking about. You're not reading the same Gemara that I am in Source Yudzayin. After in his opening line, he quotes the Baal HaMor. He says, Amar HaKosev, Ein Zenachon. He says, that's not right. Shimkin Ribbis Gemaru. That's flat out Ribbis. The Yoev Leishavim Beya. I'm giving him 100. Veshaka Meyav Hamsh. I'm getting 150 back. Velem Takanavim Mechas. And it won't work to say, well, the tax benefit is equal to that. Elem Gein Ola HaMechas. Kineged Masha Nosim Yosim Ichdei Demein. Unless you're going to tell me that the tax benefit is $50. That's not necessarily true, but that's what Ramban says is true. You could argue that it doesn't have to be precise. He's accepting that he's going to do this in exchange for that. I'm not going to let you argue with me because I really am stuck for time on this. He says, and it doesn't sound like that in the Gemara. But Lamash Mahachi, the Gemara doesn't sound like that either. And further, then he shouldn't have said, it's good for them for it to be in my possession. That doesn't fit the wording because it's not in his possession. It's in the other guy's possession. So the Ramban says, absolutely not. The Ramban likes Rashi's take. So right now we have Rashi and we have Ramban. Rashi's take of what Rav Chama is doing is that the responsibility for the goods rests with the owner, with Rav Chama. That's where the goods are. And when he sells it, that's when the property becomes his. He's going to give me back the proceeds on it, but that's okay. And as far as the work that he did for me, it's canceled out by the benefit he has from this monopoly and from the tax. The Baal HaMor says absolutely not. There is no Skartircha discussion in the Baal HaMor. As far as he's concerned, that's not part of our discussion. And instead, in order to differentiate this from Ayin Beis, the responsibility is on the borrower. It's on Meron. And that means he's paying me more than he got from me. Yeah, but he also got from me the Skartircha, the tax monopoly. The Rambam says, ha, I have a whole other way to read this case. The in Source Yudchet, the Rambam didn't actually say it. It's the Magid Mishnah who said it, to be fair. The Rambam said a halacha, and the Magid Mishnah said, yeah, that's Rechama's Tarsha. It's the first half of Source Yudchet. There's a barrel of wine. It's worth a dinar right now. I sell the wine to Meron, saying, you don't have to pay me right now. You can pay me during the summer. With a condition saying that if anything happens to the wine between now and the summertime, it's my problem, not Meron's problem. Until Meron sells it off. See, Meron isn't interested in drinking the wine. Meron wants to resell the wine. So I sell Meron my wine, keeping responsibility for the wine with me. He's going to sell it off for a higher price in the summertime, and then he's going to pay me back for it. It's no different from what we've discussed until now. Because if something happens to it, it's not his problem, it's my problem, the seller's problem. I'll go you one better. And the way Meron is making profit on this is that he's going to sell it off at an even higher price than he's paying me. So if he can't find someone to buy it, he can give it back to me, return it, and the deal is done. That's the first half of the Rambam. I'm not going to go into the second half, not because it's not interesting, it's fascinating, but because we're just not going to finish then in time, and I really have taken enough time on this. The Magid Mishnah says, in Source Yates, that Ulai Zeb Beir Latarsha de Rav Chama. Maybe that's the Rav Chama case. Maybe that's what the Rambam is reading into Rav Chama. Now, what the Rambam is doing here is basically Rashi. Right? It's basically Rashi and Ayin Beis to Ayin Gimel about Molus Charas. So keeping the responsibility with the seller. The differences are mostly in terms of the case, not the principles that are involved. Meaning, Rashi's case is really a loan of the sale proceeds to Meron. Meaning, he's going to sell it, and when he sells it, the money is going to be lent to him. The Rambam's case is a sale of the product to the agent. I am selling him the goods, it's just that it hasn't been sold yet. You follow? I sold it to him, not he is selling it to somebody else and I'm lending him the money. It's a difference in the case, not a difference in the laws. Number two, the agent's profit, Meron's profit, is directly his own from his sale of the merchandise. He's not using my funds from the sale. His profit is whatever he makes when he buys it from me for 2 dinar and he sells it for 3 dinar, that 3rd dinar is his profit. The Rambam also doesn't do anything with the tax and monopoly benefit. And the Rambam is not dealing with transporting the goods someplace else. Those are simply gone from this piece. I'm going to come back to both of those points. The only huge difference, the only substantive difference, though, is that the Rambam omits any mention of Sartircha. Nothing about Sartircha. We have to come back to that as well. So let's do it now, because I'm skipping the second half of the Rambam statement. No, 2 questions regarding the Rambam's view. Why didn't the Rambam mention the issue of Sartircha?
Why would he?
What do you mean, why would he? Because he worked on my stuff.
But in the Rambam's case, is a delayed sale.
Yeah.
It's a delayed sale. For some reason, I want to deposit my goods with you.
But I have a chayus.
No, why am I a chayus?
I'm the seller. I am Rav Chama. I have the responsibility. Harei
b'rishus
hamocher.
B'rishus hamocher. The lokeach who's going to become the mocher does not have a chayus until he sells it.
Correct. So that means he's working on the mocher's stuff. He's working on my stuff.
Yeah,
why isn't he paid for it?
Because I have more obligation.
Let me give you an easy answer. Look at the Drisha. Source Chaf. I understand that you could suggest that maybe it's because the property really belongs to him now, because it turns out that it was sold to him. After he succeeds in selling it, it turns out that it was really his all along, just without the Achrayus. But the Drisha's answer is much simpler, because the Rambam structured the case differently. In the Rambam's case, it didn't go from point A to point B. Look at the bold in Chaf. Mashain Kain Kan. Came and she'ein lo torach kol kach. He doesn't have to do anything. Hacham is b'mkoma munachas. It's just sitting there. Gam b'tam she'ein lo yimtel amachrak yurtzonor. He can't even give it back to me if he can't find anybody. So there's no tircha for me to pay him. That's the Drisha's explanation. Why didn't the Rambam do anything with the meches business, with the tax business? Why didn't the Rambam do anything with that? So the Rabinovich in his Yapshuta here, I didn't agree with a lot that he said in the Yapshuta, but I like this point. The Rabinovich says in source Chaf Aleph, he says, "Vim Tomer Lama da da da." He says, "Alein Legamri Benatam Shomer of Chama to Chol Hechid Dekazli Shakilu Michsa Benakalu Shuka." Why did the Rambam omit the whole tax and monopoly thing? So he says, because the Rambam isn't paskening for Rav Chama. The Rambam is paskening for the world, for everybody to be able to do this. So Shochina and Meiron can also engage in such a transaction in which I provide you with merchandise and you're going to sell it, and then you're going to get some benefit from the proceeds, and you're going to give me back, right, my share from this. But not every seller is Rav Chama, right? I'm not Rav Chama. When he goes to the marketplace and says, "This is a Torchiner's goods," that's great. We're not changing anything for you. It doesn't matter. The Rambam is poskening that this is okay in any case, no matter who your merchant is. And that's why the Rambam omits that tax and monopoly business. The Rambam believes that it's not necessary.
That was a discrete case, effectively.
Correct. Correct. That's the idea. The Torah and the Shulchan Aruch in Yeridei Kufayin Gimel Tezvav bring the Rashi, Tosos, and Rush version of Rav Chama. I brought it for you in Chav Beis. Right? If I have merchandise that's sold cheaply here, more expensively elsewhere, and he is going to take it for me and bring it and sell it there, with the idea that the Achrayus is Al HaMocher, the responsibility is with me, Mutter. That works. As long as Ushiitan lo shkar tircho, as long as I pay Meron for his work in bringing it there. Just like we said in Rashi. It's straight Rashi. Rashi plus Tosfos on the shkar tircho. V'im ha-mocher adam chashuv, and if the seller is a powerful guy, then ein tzarech lazeis lo shkar tircho, then there's no need for the shkar tircho. So that's paskening Rashi, Tosfos, Rush, that version of what's going on. We either require that the goods remain under the seller's responsibility and he pays shkar tircho, or that the goods remain under the achrayus of the original owner and he's an important guy. However, they also accept the Rambam's ruling in source Chav Gimel. Chavish al yayin shishava at the dinar, if it's worth a dinar now, umachol lo b'shtayim at a kayet, and the whole deal, all arrangement, harei b'shus mochrat shimkren lokech, keep it in the possession of, or at least the responsibility of the mocher until it is sold off, that works. That works, and he's going to be able to return it, just like the Rambam said. It's verbatim Rambam. You follow? Side note here, but an important side note. Is Rav Chama's case cuts? Right? We had talked about this whole discussion about whether, you know what, I'm not even going to go into the cuts and low cuts discussion. And just to say that for those who were here for the first 2 weeks, the discussion that we had with Rav Nachman's version of Tarsha, you mentioning the early price versus mentioning the late price. Does Rav Chama believe that you don't tell this guy, that I don't tell Meron, you know, if you want to pay for it today, you can get it at a lower price than if you buy it later? Is it, or does it specifically have to be a low cuts case? Right? Does it have to be a case in which I don't tell him what the price differential is? The language of the Torah and the Shulchan Aruch here is low cuts, that you don't say anything about what the price would be if you did it today. I think it's a fascinating point that we just don't have time for. But the biggest step here, the final step toward what becomes Heter Iska today, is taking the Derech Mekaf out of this equation altogether. The Mordechai quotes you the Maharam from the Or Zeruah in Source Chav Dalet, in which he says that Tarsha of Rav Chama works even without a tax monopoly benefit. You lend, I lend. I'm going to lend $100 to Jerry to invest. The first 100 of the profit is going to go to me, and the rest is going to go to Jerry as the borrower. And since there is no tax monopoly benefit, I need to pay him for his work. That's what the Mordechai says from the Or Zeruah in that paragraph that I brought you in source Chav Dalet. I need to pay him for his Schar Tircha. I wondered, why in fact do you need to pay the Schar Tircha? In such a case, there's no moving of merchandise, but the Drisha writes as part of a separate conversation in Source Chav Hei that nonetheless there is Tircha involved in the work that he has to do to invest to make me that first dinar that's mine. So what we're doing is we're converting a loan that I am making into half milva and half pikado. It's pikado for the first $100, and then after that the rest of it becomes a halva. That's where we're doing it. And it's brought in the Shulchan Aruch in Yeridei Kuf Samach Zayin Aleph in Source Chavav. Malva Adam Lachavero Mana. I can lend somebody a mana on condition that he is going to invest it until he reaches 2 mana. Then at that, and the Achrayus is with me until then, because it's a pikadon, right? Until that moment in time. And then when he reaches 2 mana, he's going to give me that back. he's going to give me everything back. The $200 is going to go back to me. And at that point, he can do what he wants with it. That's the idea that becomes effectively the heteriska. It's not quite the same as the heteriska, because in the heteriska case, the loan and the pikadon are simultaneous. Here, they're in sequence. You follow? That's the difference. In fact, the Chavos Das believes that the milvah and pikadon are simultaneous here in Yoredeya. But the Ziva Shalom points out that nobody else thinks that. It's not so. But here's an interesting difference between, and this is my last point, here's an interesting difference between simultaneous and sequential loan and pikadon. The Ziva Shalom points out that if he's working entirely for himself, he can do whatever he wants with the funds. In a case where it's in sequence, right, he can do what he wants. As opposed to where it's simultaneous, where I can say to him, I didn't give you this money in order to go do whatever you want with it. Right? The Gemara in Kuf Dalet, I brought it for you at the end here in Chav Zayin, says, Hashtar Minan Pal Gamilva, where we say that half of it is a loan. The first view of the Gemara says, Iboy Lemishne Beishich Vashavir Dami. If he wants to go out for beer, that's his option. Rava disagrees. Rava Amar Lahachin Karu Le Iska. Rava says, no, that's why they call this business and merchandise. Da Amar Lake, probably business there. Da Amar Lake, he avino lach le asuke be below the mishti be shechra. I gave it to you to do business with. I didn't give it to you to go drinking with it. You can't sell off the stuff and decide you want to go drinking. That's not the deal. It's milva pikadon right now. As opposed to where they're in sequence. Once you take care of me, you can do whatever you like. It's not up to me. So what we've accomplished now is the following, to just digest this very quickly. Hi, you didn't think I was going to get done. What we've accomplished here is that we saw a model that becomes very useful for us. We started out with the idea that you can structure what you give somebody as part investment, part loan, having nothing to do with ribbis, but having to do with achrayus. That's where Kuf Dalet was. It was about the question of who is considered to be responsible, and we said, let's split the responsibility for it. A little bit for the person who is doing you the favor by giving you the stuff to sell and to make money on, and a little bit of responsibility for the person who's actually managing it. Right? That was where we started. We then saw, though, that that's handy in terms of loans. If I'm going to convert it into a loan in which it is first going to be a pikadon, right? First it's going to be, you're watching this for me, and then eventually it will become a halva, it will become a loan at the end, then that means that you're able to give me back more than you borrowed from me, because when you borrowed it from me, you weren't really borrowing it from me. You only borrowed it from me when you actually sold it off and made more money. So then at that point, at the end, you have more money and you're paying me back the more money, and that's okay. We're good with it. The only thing is, that means that you were working with my stock until the moment of the sale. In which case, I have to pay you for that, and that's where Schar Tircha comes into play, is I'm going to have to pay you for it, or according to the Baal Hamor, that's what is accomplished with this tax benefit and monopoly benefit that you get. And that's the way that we take what's going on with Ruchama. The Rambam, again, has nuances of difference in terms of the case. The only substantive difference in terms of what the Rambam is doing is that this distinction of omitting Schar Tircha altogether, which the Drisha explained, is because there's nothing being transported, there isn't a lot of Tircha going on. But fundamentally, this is what sets up the possibility for us, since we paskin like Rav Chama, that his Tarsha is good, that you could turn a transaction loan into part Milva, part Pikadon, and that will set the table for the discussion of Heteriska, God willing, next Friday. Thank you very much.